ಮಾಧವ ಜಯೋ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನವಲ್ಲಭ ಜಯೋ ಗಿರಿವರದಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ಗಿರಿವರದಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ಗಿರಿವರದಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ಗಿರಿವರದಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನವಲ್ಲಭ ಜಯೋ ಗಿರಿವರದಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ಗಿರಿವರದಾರಿ ವರದಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ಗಿರಿವರದಾರಿ ಜಯ ಯಶೋದನಂದನ ಜಯೋ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಜಯ ಯಶೋದನಂದನ ಜಯೋ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ ಜಯೋ ಯಮುನ ತೀರವನ್ನ ಚಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ಯಮುನ ತೀರವನ್ನ ಚಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ರಾಧ ಮಾಧವ ಜಯೋ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ರಾಧ ಮಾಧವ ಜಯೋ ಕುಂಜ ಬಿಹಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನವಲ್ಲಭ ಜಯೋ ಗಿರಿವರದಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ಗಿರಿವರದಾರಿ ಜಯ ಗೋಪಿ ಜನವಲ್ಲಭ ಜಯೋ ಗಿರಿವರದಾರಿ ಜಯೋ ಗಿರಿವರದಾರಿ ಜಯ ಯಶೋದನಂದನ ಜಯೋ ಬ್ರಜ ಜನರಂಜನ జయ యశోద నందన జయ బ్రజ జన రంజన జయ యమున తీరవన చారి జయ కుంజ బిహారి జయ యమున తీరవన చారి జయ కుంజ బిహారి హరి కృష్ణ 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 హరి 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 రామ రమ రమ హరి 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరి 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 రామ రమ రమ హరి 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 కృష్ణ 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 హరి 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 రామ రమ రమ హరి హరి జయ ప్రభు పద జయ ప్రభు పద జయ ప్రభు పద శీల ప్రభు పద జయ ప్రభు పద జయ ప్రభు పద జయ ప్రభు పద శీల ప్రభు పద
జయ ఓం విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరిజాకాచార్య స్తోత్ర సత్యశ్రీ ఏసి భక్తి వేదాంత స్వామి శ్రీల ప్రభుపారికి జయ ఓం విష్ణుపాద పరమహంస పరిజాకాచార్య స్తోత్ర సత్యశ్రీ భక్తి సిద్ధాంత సరస్వతి గోస్వామి మహారాజ్కి జయ్ అనంతకోటి వైష్ణవ వృందకి జయ్ నామాచార్య శ్రీల హరిదాస్ ఠాకూర్కి జయ్ ప్రేమశేఖర్ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శ్రీవాసరి గౌర భక్తి వృందకి జయ్ శ్రీ శ్రీ రాధాకృష్ణ గోపి గోపిన చామకున్ రాధకున్ గిరి గౌరధానికి జయ్ వృందావన్ ధామ్కి జయ్ మాయపూర్ నవదీప్ ధామ్కి జయ్ జగన్నాథ్పూరి ధామ్కి జయ్ గంగమయ్యకి జయ్ యమునమయ్యకి జయ్ భక్తిదేవి తులసి మహారాణికి జయ్ హరినామ సంకీర్తానికి జయ్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు అసెంబ్లీ డివోటీస్ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీ గురు అండ్ శ్రీ గౌరంగ ఆల్ గ్లోరీస్ టు శ్రీల ప్రభుపాద జయ్
ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ ఓం నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6. Canto 6 is called Prescribed Duties for Mankind. We're into Chapter 16. King Chitraketu meets the Lord. And text number 38. Is that right? 38? Vishaya Triso Nara Pasavo. Ya upasate vibhutirna param tvam. Tesham asisha isha. Tad anu vinashyanti yata rajakulam. Vishaya triso nara pasavo. Ya upasate vibhutirna param tvam. Tesham asisha isha. Tad anu vinashyanti yata rajakulam. Vishaya trisho nara pasavo. Ya upasate vibhutirna param tvam. Tesham asisha isha. Tad anu vinashyanti yata rajakulam. Vishaya Trisha, eager to enjoy sense gratification. Nara Pashavaha, men like animals. Ye, who upasate, worship very gorgeously. Vibhutihi, small particles of the Supreme Lord, the demigods. Na, not. Param, the Supreme. Tvam, you. Tesham, of them. Ashishaha, the benedictions. Isha, O Supreme Controller. Tat, them, the demigods. Anu, after. Vinashyanti, will be vanquished. Yata, just as. Rajakulam, those who are supported by the government. When the government is finished. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki. O Lord, O Supreme, unintelligent persons who thirst for sense enjoyment and who worship various demigods are no better than animals in the human form of life. Because of their animalistic propensities, they fail to worship your lordship, and instead they worship the insignificant demigods, who are but small sparks of your glory. With the destruction of the entire universe, including the demigods, the benedictions received from the demigods also vanish, just like the nobility when a king is no longer in power. Translation responsively. O Lord, O Supreme, unintelligent persons who thirst for sense enjoyment and who worship various demigods are no better than animals in the human form of life. Because of their animalistic propensities, they fail to worship your lordship. And instead, they worship the insignificant demigods, who are but small sparks of your glory. With the destruction of the entire universe, including the demigods, the benedictions received from the demigods also vanish, just like the nobility when a king is no longer in power. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Bhagavad Gita 7.20 says, Kamastaistair hirta jnanaha prabhyante nya devataha. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto the demigods. Similarly, this verse condemns worship of the demigods. We may show our respects to the demigods, but the demigods are not worshipable. The intelligence of those who worship the demigods is lost, hirta jnanaha. Because these worshippers do not know that when the entire material cosmic manifestation is annihilated, the demigods, who are the departmental heads of that manifestation, will be vanquished. When the demigods are vanquished, the benedictions given by the demigods to unintelligent men will also be vanquished. Therefore, a devotee should not hanker to obtain material opulence by worshipping the demigods, but should engage in the service of the Lord, who will satisfy all his desires. Akama sarva kamo va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether full of all material desires, free from material desires, or desiring liberation, a person who has broader intelligence must, by all means, worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. Bhagavatam 2.3.10. This is the duty of a perfect human being, one who has the shape of a human being, but whose actions are nothing but those of an animal, is called Narapashu or Dvipada Pashu, a two-legged animal. A human being who is not interested in Krishna consciousness is condemned herewith as a Narapashu. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha శ్రీ చైతన్య మనోభీష్టం స్థాపితం యేన భూతలే స్వయం రూప కదా మహ్యం దదాతి స్వపదాంతికం వంచా కల్పత్రవృశ్య కృపా సింధుభ్య ఏవచ పతితానాం పావనేభ్యో వైష్ణవేభ్యో నమో నమః. జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధార శ్రీవాసడి గౌరభక్తవృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. హరే కృష్ణ. Translation: O Lord, O supreme, unintelligent persons who thirst for sense enjoyment and who worship various demigods are no better than animals in the human form of life. Because of their animalistic propensities, they fail to worship your lordship, and instead they worship the insignificant demigods who are but small sparks of your glory. With the destruction of the entire universe, including the demigods, the benedictions received from the demigods also vanish, just like the nobility when a king is no longer in power. Hare Krishna. Everything vanishes. Just like the nobility when a king is no longer in power. What comes to mind? To me, what straight away comes to mind is what happened to all the Maharajas in India. Are there any left? I don't know. Huh? Few are still there. But what happened to the most? Thanks to the English. Right? And with them, what happened to all their nobility and all their power? All gone. Right? So, okay. Now, speakers often like to do a summary to give a background of what's happening here. Okay? And many speakers before me have been doing that. I'm going to do it again. But very quickly, very briefly, for two reasons. One is to give context to the class so that the listeners can actually appreciate more in the framework of what's going on. But another reason, and a more important reason as to why we do or give a background of what's happening in the pastime, is for us, the speaker and the listener, to try and relate to how the pastime applies to us. That is more important. Okay, every stage of this pastime, it's quite relatable, if you think about it. Starting with what? King Chitragetu is an advanced devotee, yeah? We call ourselves devotee too, correct? So we're not advanced, but at least we're devotees. So there's some similarity, at least the common denominator there is we're devotees, like him, right? He had 10 million wives. We don't have 10 million wives. Right? And no children. And no children, therefore, he then was blessed with the association of Sadhu, Angira Rishi. Now we are blessed too. Correct? We're getting lots of association from various sadhus around us, okay, devotees. And then he prays to Angira Rishi for a child. That's a material prayer. And we too, in our hearts, we have lots of material desires. We pray to the Lord for material benedictions. And that shows ignorance. So there's another similarity there between us and Maharaj Chitraketu. Not that he is ignorant, he is actually being used as an instrument in this pastime to display that quality for our sakes. Therefore, we can relate to that point of ignorance coming up as to how one prays. So he prays for something material, and Angira Rishi grants that. Well, you pray for something material, fine, I'll give it to you. Son is born, and Harshashoka, things are happy, everyone is doting on him, except the queens who did not bear the child. Out of the 10 million, only one was happy, the others, they were envious. So what did they do? They poisoned him, they killed him. Then that material benediction, that temporary enjoyment disappeared. Same thing, we can relate to that. Right? In our daily lives too, many things come, we enjoy a little bit and then it disappears and we feel sad, lament. So that's what's happening here. So there's lots of lamentation. Chitraketu is lamenting, and then misery comes in. But again, due to association of the sadhus, the special mercy, the causeless mercy of the Lord to actually make us jivas to come in contact with elevated personalities, the gurus. Brahmande brahmite kono bhagyavan jiv, guru krishna prasadapai bhakti lata bij. Okay. By the mercy of Krishna, we get guru, and by the mercy of guru, we get Krishna. Okay. They plant the seed of the bhakti lata bij, the seed of kripa of devotional service. And through their association, it begins to sprout. So this time Narada Muni comes and he says, all right, they give him enlightenment. Okay, they tell him, initially you prayed for material benefit. You got it now, you've lost it, and now we're going to give you spiritual knowledge, which they do. And after giving that, what happens next? Narada Muni drives home the point that this material world is temporary, anything in the material world, the benedictions, all temporary. He drives home the point in a very unique, fascinating way. He calls that same jiva back into that body, the dead boy's body. Okay, and that jiva comes and says, what? Who are you? You're not my father, you're not my mother. I've been transmigrating in many, many lifetimes, going from body to body, okay, demigods, animals, aquatics, plants. In which lifetime were you both my parents? So that shakes up Chitraketu, and definitely, surely now with Narada Muni's mercy, he comes out of that mode of ignorance. He's enlightened. The shackles of affection are cut. Lamentation is given up. And that realization comes that that relationship is based on an illusory one. And then they go through the funeral ceremony of conducting for the dead body, and they burn the body. And the queens who actually poison the child, they seek atonement for killing the child, and they bathe in the Yamuna to seek atonement. Similarly, Chitraketu Maharaj also, he bathes in the Yamuna, he pays oblations to his forefathers, water oblations, and he worships these two Brahmanas, the sons of Lord Brahma, Angira Muni and Narada Rishi, Narada Muni. So, with the spiritual enlightenment, he's worshipping them. Narada Muni then gives him the Mahavidya instructions, the mantra, and after giving those instructions, that mantra, Narada Muni and Angira Rishi, they leave. They go to Brahmaloka. For 7 days, Chitraketu Maharaj, he chants this mantra with determination, fasting only on water. And as an intermediate byproduct of his endeavors, he is rewarded with the material opulence of the Vidyadhara planet. And a few days later, he then actually is rewarded even more with the personal darshan of Lord Ananta. Now, Bhagavatam here gives a very beautiful description of Lord Ananta. His complexion is as white as the fibers of the lotus flower. And he is wearing bluish garments. He's got glittering helmet on his head, glittering armlets, glittering bangles. And his beautiful face is tinged with the color of redness. So, and he's got a smiling demeanor, smiling face. King Chitraketu is overcome by ecstasy. He displays ecstatic symptoms, hair standing on end, tears. Then using his intelligence, keyword intelligence, even in today's words, he pacifies his mind and starts praying to the Lord, offers wonderful prayers. A few days ago, Jagannath Ram Prabhu gave a beautiful class on prayers as to how to offer prayers, what type of prayers. Briefly, prayers are expressions of the heart and mind. Right? So, in a nutshell, they are realizations. How we pray, what we pray, it actually reveals what is in our heart and in our mind. Right? The pages of the Bhagavatam are full of wonderful prayers. Queen Kunti's prayers, Prahlad Maharaja's prayers, Dhruva Maharaja's prayers, Lord Brahma's prayers, Akrura's prayers, many wonderful prayers. But all these prayers actually are revelations of their exalted consciousness, revelations of their heart and their mind. The deepest of truths, the deepest of truth lies hidden in the heart of the Vaishnavas. So that's why, therefore, there's this phrase, Mahajano Yena Gata Sapanta. We follow in the footsteps of these great Mahajans, these exalted personalities, to learn how to pray. To learn as to how to glorify the Lord. That's essentially prayers. Okay. Prayers, as I said, it reveals our state of consciousness. And we have different, when we take a cross-section of the populace, we've got different levels of consciousness in society. Actually, if you take the society, you can categorize people, especially when it comes to the topic of God, you can categorize people into two main categories. One, the non-believers. The other one, believers of God. Now, non-believers, we can easily describe them. They're not in this room, but there are many that we associate with, and I must qualify that. They're not in this room, and they are not among those who are listening to this class through internet. Okay? But I'm talking about those material conscious people where they are faithless, their ignorance is so deep, their passion is so intense, they've got gross sense enjoyment, they are not pious. And we see that out there in the general populace. You talk about God to them, they don't want to know anything about God. You can't even touch on the topic of religion. They just don't want to come near it. In fact, to those kind of people, to be irreligious is the current fashion. When, I'm not sure about your work environment, it is dangerous to bring up the topic of God because you can be seen as the odd one out. But for the others, it's like it's in vogue, in fashion, to proudly declare that they are irreligious, they don't want to know anything about God. That's ignorance, deep, deep ignorance. But are they non-devotees? They are devotees. Because where did we jivas actually come from? We all came from the spiritual sky. We left Krishna because of that minute independence that we have. We left Krishna, we wanted to enjoy separately from Him, and now we're in the material world. And through the association with material nature, mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance, and through this transmigration of the soul from body to body, they've been covered with this thick mud of ignorance. So they are devotees because of that thick covering. in such deep ignorance, they cannot relate to anything about God. That's one side of the pendulum. Now, if you sing to the, like a pendulum, you know, in the old days, clocks have this pendulum swinging left and right. Okay? So one side of the pendulum, you have got these non-believers. The other side, if you swing, you've got the believers. Now, the believers of God, we can actually subdivide them into two. Those who worship God directly, God meaning Krishna, and those who worship Him indirectly. Now, those who worship Krishna directly can be further divided into Akama devotees and Sakama devotees. Akama devotees are those who are pure devotees. So that's why I say it's like the other extreme from non-believers. We're now talking about the pure devotees. The pure devotees of the Lord, they have got no material desires. They are only absolutely interested in pleasing the Lord. Everything that they do is for the Lord's pleasure. They personify the definition of pure devotional service as given by Srila Rupa Goswami. And what is that? Anya Bilashita. Go on. Anya Bilashita Sunyam Jnana Karmadi Anukulyena Bhakti Ruttama. Okay. And word for word translation of that, of what we just said, Anya Bilashita Sunyam. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna favorably and without desires for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. And that's who Akama Bhaktas are. And a good example of this is the gopis of Vrindavan, in Vrindavan. So their only desire is to please the Lord. They've got no other desires. Okay. So much so that if the pleasure that they naturally feel through the activity of serving the Lord, when they naturally feel the pleasure that comes with it, so much so, they don't want that pleasure if that pleasure interferes with their service. That's how exalted their consciousness is. So they say, and when we do devotional service, to feel pleasurable is a natural outcome. But they don't even want that if that pleasure interferes with their service to God. And what does Krishna do in return? When he sees, oh, my devotees are giving such wonderful service, I'm so pleased, he gives them more pleasure. And when he gives them more pleasure, what do the gopis do? Oh no, we are feeling more ecstatic, we don't want it if it interferes with our service to please him. They give it back to him. And what does Krishna do? He gives some more. So there is this transcendental competition to please each other. Akama bhaktas pleasing the Lord and the Lord pleasing the devotees. That is service in pure transcendental knowledge. That is purity. Very exalted consciousness. Very difficult for us to actually even aspire. Then among, so we've talked about the non-believers, Akama Bhaktas. Then we've got Sakama Bhaktas. Who are Sakama Bhaktas? Sakama Bhaktas are those who are actually pious. They've got faith. They're worshipping Krishna directly, but with material desires. Can we relate to that? Who can relate to that? Everyone. That's how our position is. Okay? We are practicing to move away from being attached to material desires, but that's where we are. So they've got faith, they're pious, they're following religious principles like us. We are following the four regulative principles. They are following the scriptural injunctions, reading the scriptures, and our life is modeled along that way. So, Sakama Bhaktas. It's good compared to the non-believers. So in other words, in our previous lifetimes, who knows, we could have been non-believers too. But something along the way gave us connection to Krishna. And that is the mercy of the Lord. Sukriti. We probably got Sukriti directly or unknowingly. Agyata Sukriti. Agyata Sukriti is where, that's why when we do Harinams, we go chanting on the streets and all that. Even the non-believers out there, they are hearing. That is Agyata Sukriti for them. So this thick covering of mud that they have, somehow this Agyata Sukriti will accumulate and in some time in future through the mercy of the Lord and the devotees will fructify. The seed of devotional service will begin to germinate. So, Sakama Bhaktas. And what kind of, how do we classify this group of devotees who are actually worshipping the Lord directly and have got these material desires? They come to the Lord for what? Out of distress? Four kinds of people who come to the Lord. Who are they? Those who are in distress? Inquisitive? Those who are seeking wealth? And those who are seeking knowledge, jnana. Right? So we've talked about the non-believers, we've talked about the Akama Bhaktas, we've talked about the Sakama Bhaktas. Now, there's another group called, remember I said just now, the indirect worshippers of Krishna? Among these indirect worshippers of Krishna, we have the demigod worshippers. They also have faith, they also pious, but the only difference, they too have material desires, but the only difference is they are worshipping Krishna indirectly, through demigods. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita, where those who are worshipping demigods, they're actually worshipping me ultimately. It's just that they don't know, they're worshipping in a wrong way. Avidhi Purvakam. Okay, they're worshipping Krishna in the wrong way due to lack of knowledge. But at least they're worshipping indirectly. That's a good thing. Right? Now, do we actually worship them totally? Here, Prabhupada says in the purport, we may show our respects to the demigod. But the demigods are not worshipable. We need broader intelligence. When we are already worshipping Krishna directly, why would we want to worship the demigods and worship Krishna indirectly? Who are demigods? How many of them are there? What is their role? Let's talk a little bit. Who are demigods? They are jivas, okay? They are empowered jivas. They are little minute controllers, okay? And in Krishna's government structure, in fact, it says here, Rajakulam, those who are supported by the government. The word government is used. So in Krishna's government, in the material world, okay, they have been given responsibilities. Yesterday's verse, there was a little bit about creation. Now, Lord Brahma is in charge of secondary creation, Visarga process. Now, Lord Brahma himself doesn't have that full independent knowledge to create. He is enlightened by Krishna to do the secondary creation. He is given the blueprint. So when Brahma goes about his process of secondary creation, all this blueprint he uses is like, okay, this one, Lord of the Rain, we will give that position, that title, Lord Indra. This one, Lord of Fire. His job is to control fire, Agni. This one, Lord of Water. His job is to control water, Vayu. Sorry, Varuna. This one, Wind, Vayu. Okay? Like that, all this structure is created. But who actually appoints the personalities into these positions? Krishna. And there are 33 million demigods. Yeah? 33 million. And Prabhupada, actually in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, Prabhupada talks about the example of the tree. If we know Krishna is the root of the tree, and 33 million demigods, if they are represented by the leaves and the branches and all that, how do we water the tree? An intelligent person doesn't go from one leaf to another watering each leaf. What would they do? Water where? The root. And by watering the root, the whole tree, the branches, the leaves are all nourished. All demigods are pleased. Even Lord Brahma, as we know, in his creation, he has got a limited lifespan. In fact, we can become Brahma if we want. It's a position. All you have to do is, for 100 consecutive lifetimes, you be a pure devotee. 100 consecutive lifetimes, if you are a pure devotee, then you are eligible to become Brahma. And even that is up to Krishna to make you Brahma. We are struggling to even become pure devotee in one life. Okay. And Brahma lives for how long in terms of solar years? That is 3.42 billion is only half the day. It's only daytime. Then there's another 3.42 billion, the night time. That's just one day. Okay? And he lives for 100 years. So if you multiply all that, it's 311 trillion 40 billion years. How do you even write that number? 311, 040, then put 9 zeros after that. Inconceivable. But still, he has a limited lifespan. He has to give up his position. Whatever benedictions he gives, temporary in that sense. And at the end of destruction, as it says here, Prabhupada says, when the entire material cosmic manifestation is annihilated, the demigods, who are the departmental heads of that manifestation, will be vanquished. So at the end of this cosmic manifestation, Mahapralaya, all those who are in the planet of Brahmaloka together with Lord Brahma, they go back to the spiritual kingdom. But everybody else, whatever benedictions that they had, all gone, vanquished. Even Lord Indra, okay, we have spoken about Lord Brahma, even Lord Indra, he has got a limited lifespan. And if you want to become Indra, you can. Perform 100 Aswamedha Yajnas perfectly. We remember the pastime of Prithu Maharaj. Prithu Maharaj was doing this Aswamedha Yajnas perfectly. Came to number 99. Indra felt threatened. He was very attached to his position. He didn't want that 100th Aswamedha Yajna to be completed. And what did he do? He stole the sacrificial horse. Not once, not twice, many times. Because he didn't want to give up his position. So, that's not our destination. And among these demigods, the material opulence that they enjoy is far, far more than what we think we have in this planet Earth. It is more intense than what we see here on planet Earth. It is so intense that these very same demigods that people worship too, these very same demigods, they pray saying that, oh my dear Lord, at the end of my life, if at all there is any pious credit left, please let me take birth where? On earth. Why? Because as they are doing their duty in their role as administrators and officers and directors in Krishna's government, they are exposed to this degree and intensity of material enjoyment that they cannot focus on their sadhana. It is too sensuous. The environment for them is too sensuous. There are too many distractions for them to actually perform sadhana. Therefore, they pray, my dear Lord, please let me take birth on earth. Why? One, earth planet, we got a direct passport to go back to the spiritual kingdom. In the creation, there are two planets where we got direct passport to go to the spiritual kingdom. As I said earlier, one is Brahmaloka. To attain Brahmaloka itself is a challenge. But then there's another special planet, Earth, where we've got that direct passport to go to the spiritual kingdom. That's how fortunate we are. Okay. Not only that, not only are we fortunate in the sense that we are born on planet Earth, Lord Krishna himself has placed his lotus footprints on this planet Earth 5,000 years ago. Bhumi Devi, she feels ecstatic with these lotus imprints that Krishna has left behind. Not only that, we are chanting the holy name. Canto 3, chapter 33, text number 7 of the Bhagavatam says, for one who is chanting the holy name in this life, it means in our previous lives, we have bathed in all the holy rivers. We have performed all kinds of sacrifices and austerities. We have read all the Vedic literatures. To be able to come to this point where we are chanting the holy name in this life, and we have taken birth on the planet Earth, that very same Earth where the demigods themselves want to come to, and on top of that, we are in this holy Tirtha called Melbourne where Prabhupada himself has set his foot. Meditate on that, how fortunate we are. So that's a little bit about demigods. So demigod worshippers, they are indirectly praying to the Lord through the demigods. The benedictions given by demigods is temporary. And the demigod worshippers, at the end of their life, they take birth among the demigods. Because when they are praying to their Ishta Deva, of course their Ishta Deva would then grant them the benediction, come, you come to my planet. But see the irony. Demigod worshippers take birth in the planet of the demigods. Demigods want to come to earth. So we need intelligence. But it's hard. It's hard because, look, to be honest, how many here actually worship demigods? Hands up. Don't be shy. Hands up. Okay? Nothing to be ashamed of. Demigod worship is very relatable to Indian-bodied people who actually came from the subcontinent or through the Indian diaspora of having moved around the globe in various places where they are. They have taken with them this culture of worshipping demigods. Why? Because many of us have been brought up in that way. Non-Indian bodied people may find this hard to relate to. I was brought up as a demigod worshipper. My roots are in subcontinent India, but I was born in Malaysia, and in Malaysia it's like a mini India. Every corner you have a temple. Just like in Malaysia, in India, every street you got temples. Everyone's doing something with that deity at the temple. So much so, we take it for granted. Yeah. My mother would say when I was young, we go to temple, like I said, many temples, just pray, put the holy ash, which I did. Just followed mother. Bless her soul. She left her body last year. But it is that culture that we have come up with. Therefore, it is hard for us to let go. But again, through the mercy of the Lord, through the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, in this lifetime, through the Sukriti or Agyata Sukriti that we have accumulated in previous lives, we have come to this point where in this life, we are shifting from being demigod worshippers to Krishna. That needs intelligence. That needs detachment. That needs knowledge of the scriptures. As much as we shouldn't worship the demigods, as what Prabhupada is saying here, we need to respect them, but in the same manner that we feel difficult to let go, we need to learn to let go, because it is more relishing to worship Krishna directly. The pleasure that comes with worshipping Krishna is eternal. The benefit that we get is eternal. The joy that comes with doing devotional service, not to please demigods, but to please Krishna, is more enjoyable in that sense. So we need knowledge. Real knowledge. Real knowledge is that which comes down from the spiritual platform through parampara all the way down through the scriptures. Material knowledge is ascending. It is going through a process of experiments. Neti, neti, is not this, not this. It is full of speculation. So we need to rely on scriptures, guru, sadhu, shastra, to accept that knowledge through the parampara. Then, when this knowledge actually comes into our mind, using intelligence, that knowledge would then, gyan would then become vigyan. Realization in the heart. And with realization in the heart, it becomes easier for us to let go worship of demigods. So we got to stick to the process. There are 9 processes of devotional service. What are they? Shravanam, Kirtanam. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atma, Nivedanam. Here, Chitraketu Maharaj is displaying which one? Vandanam. Correct? Prayers. So, any one of these processes of devotional service, we can perfect our lives. So here's the question. Demigod worship, we know there are many, many demigods being worshipped. Too many to worship. Cannot please all of them. But on our altar, you see, there are so many personalities. Different shapes, different forms. So, are we worshipping many gods? Who says yes? Hands up. Who says no? Hands up. All hands are going up. Very intelligent. Right? Even though we have got many, many personalities on the altar, it is one God who has appeared in different forms and mood. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. What does the word Godhead mean? He's the head of gods. Right? He's the supreme. He's got his own abode called Goloka Vrindavan. Way up there, he's just a simple cowherd boy. He's the cause of all causes. Every class we sing Jaya Radha Madhava song, it is so rich in describing the picture of Vrindavan. Jaya Radha Madhava, Kunja Bihari, okay. Gopi Jana Vallabha is the darling of the gopis. Okay. Gopi Jana Vallabha, then after that, what is that? Giri Varadhari, he is the lifter of the Govardhan hill with his little pinky finger at the age of 7. Then after that, what's the next line? Yashoda Nandana. He's the darling son of Mother Yashoda. Then? Prajajana Ranjana. Okay. He's the beloved of the residents of the Holy Dham. Yes, Brajabasis. Then the last line. Yamuna Tira Vanachari, it means he is wandering through the forests of Vrindavan. Just like demigods who have got various job description. Okay, take charge of Vayu, you know, like rain, fire, water. Krishna too has got his job description. What is Krishna's job description? To enjoy. That's his job. His job is to enjoy. And our job is to serve him, to give him that enjoyment. And he has this enjoyment through many, many activities. Lord Brahma sings, Chintamani prakara satma sukalpa vriksha laksha vritesu surabirabhipalayantam lakshmi sahasra sata sambrahma sevyamanam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. Chintamani prakara. His abode is full of spiritual gems. Even though he is a spiritual, simple cowherd boy, dressed as a cowherd boy, but it is so opulent, more opulent than the planets of the demigods. Nothing surpasses that opulence. And here on our altar, he has mercifully appeared as Ballabha, Archa Vigraha form, in this threefold bending form, exquisite, beautiful form, out of his causeless mercy, so that we can actually connect, awaken our sambandha with him, our loving, transcendental relationship with him. So, why then do we have all these different personalities on the altar? If they are one God with different forms and different shapes, what is the interrelationship between that
Tribhanga form Vallabha with the other personalities that we have on the altar today. How is he connected to, we have got, say on this left hand side, Lord Nityananda. What's the connection there? Different yuga. Okay. Maharaj Chitraketu is getting the darshan of Sankarshan, Lord Ananta, who is none other than Balaram. Balaram is the first expansion of that Vallabha, that cowherd boy, that Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. He is the first expansion of that Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, Balaram. And in the Yuga, according to this Yuga, for Kali Yuga, that Balaram has now appeared, not expanded, he has appeared in the form of Lord Nityananda. In his most merciful form. Next to Lord Nityananda, we have Lord Gauranga, Lord Chaitanya. Now, who is he? He is Krishna himself in the mood of Srimati Radharani. Now, what is that mood? That mood is mood of intense separation from Krishna. And he has come in that mood of intense separation, in the mood of his topmost devotee, Srimati Radharani, feeling separation from the Lord himself, in the mellow of conjugal love. Every morning when we do Shaligram prayers, there's a prayer that we chant. Anarpita charim chirad karunaya tirna kalav samrapayetum unnata jolara samswa bhakti sriyam harihi purata sundara dyoti kadamba sandipita sada hardaya kandaris puratuva sachinandanaha. May the Lord, who is known as the son of Mother Sachi, be situated in the innermost core of my heart. Resplendent with the color of molten gold, he has descended into this age of Kali by his causeless mercy to bestow what no other incarnation has ever bestowed before, which is the highest mellow of devotional service, which is the mellow of conjugal love, in that mood of separation. So we have got Vallabha, we have got Lord Nityananda, we have got Lord Gauranga. Who is next to Vallabha? Srimati Radharani. Who is she? How is she connected to Krishna? Srimati Radharani is his bliss potency. She is bliss personified. Okay, and no one can equal Srimati Radharani in the way that she loves Krishna. Then on the right-hand side, we got that altar with three other personalities. Very beautiful looking. We got Lord Balaram, we have got Subhadra Devi, and we got Lord Jagannath. What is the connection there to Swayam Bhagavan Krishna? How are they connected? Why are they in that form? Let's talk about that pastime where how they appeared in that form. So, when Krishna was ruling Dwaraka, one time there was this solar eclipse, and to get that pious credits, all the Dwaraka residents and the Vrindavan residents all converged in a place, a pilgrimage place at Kurukshetra. So when they were there, it was a very sweet meeting. You know, residents of Vrindavan, Dwaraka, and many other kings, Narada Muni were all there. Then the queens of Dwaraka, when they met the residents of Vraja, they said, "We are every day pleasing Krishna as his queens in Dwaraka. But all he remembers is you residents of Vrindavan. He's chanting Gopi. Gopi is chanting Radhe. Radhe, we are there, his queens next to him. He's not with us. physically is with us, but his mind is only with you all in Vrindavan. What is it that you all have that we don't have? Then they get Mother Rohini to actually explain that. Mother Rohini says, okay, I will explain, but we have to close the door here before I start explaining, because if Krishna and Balaram hear this, they cannot take it. They will go into ecstasy, they'll run away. Where? To Vrindavan. Right? So they tell Subhadra. Subhadra was there. I say, you go outside this room, you stand guard outside the door. Krishna and Balaram come, you don't let them in. So Mother Rohini then explains all the pastimes that Krishna enjoyed in Vrindavan with his devotees. As she is explaining, the intensity, the sweetness of all the pastimes becomes churned, the sweeter and sweeter and sweeter, that Subhadra Devi herself begins to feel these ecstatic symptoms. And without she knowing, Krishna and Balaram are already there listening to all these pastimes, standing next to her. So all three of them go into this mood of ecstasy. Krishna, Balaram and Subhadra Devi, they go into this mood of ecstasy where they take this wonderful, beautiful form. Narada Muni saw this form. And he said, I've seen this form. Now the whole world needs to see this form of Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. And that form is the form of Lord Jagannath feeling the pangs of separation from his devotees. So see the intertwining of the relationship here. We've got Lord Chaitanya, who is in the mood of his topmost devotee, feeling separation from Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, who is none other than the Lord himself. Then we have got Lord Jagannath, who is the Lord himself, who is feeling pangs of separation from his devotees, who is none other than Lord Krishna himself. So can you imagine the Radha Yatra procession? Every year we have this Radha Yatra procession around temples in ISKCON, even in Jagannath Puri. If you picture that, on the ground, you have Lord Chaitanya dancing in front of the Radha Yatra. The Lord himself, in the mood of his devotee, feeling separation from the Lord, is dancing. On the cart, we have the Lord himself feeling separation from his devotees. In fact, in the ISKCON world, Prabhupada introduced deity worship through Lord Jagannath. This happened way back when Prabhupada had opened his second center in San Francisco, the Haight-Ashbury place where there were hippies and all that. So 26 Second Avenue was already open in New York, and this was the second center in San Francisco. One day, Malati Mataji, bless her soul. Of course, at that time, she was a young bhaktin. When Prabhupada was there, she came with a shopping bag and she took out this little wooden doll, with an inverted commas doll. It was a 3-inch high doll. It's not doll, it's a deity. Okay, but at that time, they were calling it doll. There's a flat head, black in color, big round eyes, smiling, forward jutting, stumpy hands, okay, legs hardly visible. She put it in front of Prabhupada and said, Swamiji, what is this? Immediately, even before acknowledging her, what Prabhupada did was, he folded his hands together and bowed his head in prayer to that form. It was the form of Lord Jagannath. And then he told Malati, Mataji, you have brought Lord Jagannath. He is the Lord of the universe. Here is Krishna. Thank you very much. Then Prabhupada beamed with excitement. And then he started talking about how in Puri there is this wonderful festival where Lord Jagannath is residing with his brother and sister Lord Balaram and Subhadra Devi. Then Malati Mataji said, "Oh yes, the store where I bought, there are two other personalities like this." Prabhupada said, "Go and buy them." So she and her husband at that time, Shama Sundar Prabhu, they went to the store. The name of the store was Cost Plus. They bought that the other two deities. So Prabhupada then lined up in the fashion that they are here on the altar. Lord Jagannath on the right, Lord Balaram on the left, and in the middle, Subhadra Devi. Prabhupada then said, "It's very auspicious that they've appeared here." Then he asked, "Who can carve? Who knows how to carve?" By Krishna's arrangement, Malati Mataji's husband, Shama Sundar Prabhu, at that time, he was a wood sculptor. So he said, "I'm a wood sculptor." Then Prabhupada assigned him the project. "Okay, you now carve 3-foot-high deities based on these three small little ones. Use them as a reference." So he carved 3-foot-high deities. Then the day of the installation came at that center. So at that time, Prabhupada was already having his Bhagavatam classes there. Devotees, hippies were already there. Chanting was going on. Prasadam was being served. So the next edition was deity worship. The day of deity installation came. The deities were resting on a red foot shelf. No garments, no clothes, no ornaments. There was a yellow canopy over them. There were these little multicolored lights, spotlights. The room was filled with guests, with devotees. The atmosphere was reverential, festive. Then Prabhupada said, "Hayagriva," that's the name of a disciple that Prabhupada had that time. "Hayagriva, come here." Prabhupada had arranged for a tray with a big candle on it. He said, "Light the candle." Light the candle. Then he said, "When the kirtan starts, you stand in front of the deities and do that with the candle being lit." That was the arati. Okay. And he said, "Once you have done that, you pass it to the next person. Next person, next person. Give everybody the chance. No qualification needed to worship Jagannath. No brahmanas at that time." Right? So that took place. Everybody was blissful and there was connection with Lord Jagannath. Prabhupada led the kirtan. He played his kartals and he sang the kirtan for 1 hour. And during that 1 hour, Prabhupada was happy that deity installation had happened and deity worship had begun. At the end of the kirtan, then Prabhupada said, "Here is Krishna. From now on, whenever any of you are coming to this temple, bring something for Lord Jagannath." He was engaging them. "If you're already bringing fruits, bring more fruits. If you're not bringing fruits, at least bring one fruit. If you're bringing flowers, bring more flowers. If you're not bringing flowers, at least bring one flower. Right? Offer it to Lord Jagannath." And they followed that. The hippies, being hippies, not only did they bring flowers and fruits, they brought all sorts of things. They brought half a loaf of bread. They brought a stalk of wheat. Okay, they brought chocolate fudge. They brought their new clothes to offer to Lord Krishna because they felt, "Okay, if I'm going to wear my new clothes, let me just offer it to the Lord and then I'll wear it." Hippies. They were not following, but there was that connection to the deity. Prabhupada was introducing that personal connection with the deities. Deity worship is very, very personal. They are not statues. They are not idols. They are the actual representation of Krishna in that Archa Vigraha form. They are very personal. So what we do with them, we got to have this mood that we are serving a person. So every day with that introduction, Prabhupada was observing the disciples there doing deity worship. So every day they were offering this candle, lamp. Then, interestingly, the devotees themselves approached Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, what more can we add to this worship? Only then, and only then, did Prabhupada say, okay, now you offer incense. He was guiding them to their capacity. He was getting them to be more involved, to engage them in the service. So, like that, deity worship began in the ISKCON world. And today, we've got many, many temples around the world, ISKCON temples, where gorgeous deity worship is taking place. In Melbourne, we see how gorgeous it is. Okay. But as I said, the deities are very personal, very, very personal, and it's all about developing our sambandha, our loving relationship with the Lord. Deity worship is not exclusive for the brahmanas only on the altar. Everything that we do in this temple is for the pleasure of the Lord. Whether you are outside the altar in the side of the temple room where you're sweeping the floor, it is deity worship also. Whether you're in the courtyard sweeping the temple grounds, it is deity worship also. Whether you're in the kitchen cooking something, it is deity worship also. Whether you're in the prasadam hall mopping the floor and cleaning up after the deities, after the people have had prasadam, that is also deity worship. Because everything that we do here, the whole focus, the center is Krishna. Why would we want to worship demigods when we have this kind of wonderful connection? So, in conclusion, we began this talk today giving a brief background about the pastime so far, the Chitraketu pastime. And we drew some comparison as to how, as Chitraketu Maharaj is progressing from stage to stage, where initially, out of ignorance, he was praying for a child. Now, with that spiritual enlightenment from his gurus, he is glorifying the Lord in wonderful prayer. That's his advancement. He shows how we too can advance. And I've spoken about our privileged position as devotees in this lifetime, being born on planet Earth, being able to chant, having covered whatever we did in our previous lives. And here we are, this lifetime. And in that pendulum, as I said, from non-believers to that extreme of pure devotees, we are somewhere there, getting closer on the journey to make advancement and become more pure in our mind and intelligence. So we need to continue with this. But we need intelligence. We need to apply broader intelligence, because with all this, if we do not differentiate the role and function of demigods and we treat them as absolute supreme, that is unintelligent. Worshipping Krishna is intelligent. If not, what Prabhupada says here, one who has the shape of a human being but whose actions are nothing but those of an animal is called Narapashu or Dvipadapashu or two-legged animal. Actions. The key word is actions. Okay, I'll read. One who has the shape of a human being but whose actions are nothing but those of an animal. What do animals do? Eat, sleep, mate, defend. We are beyond that. We have got consciousness. We have got this rare human form of body. Okay? With all this privilege, if we do not take this opportunity to actually push ourselves to improve our sadhana, to actually engage in worshipping not just Srila Prabhupada, but the deities in a manner that they are personal, with that understanding that the deities are personal, then we are missing the point, really. Prabhupada makes this very strong comment, where it's just like two-legged animal. We don't want to be called as two-legged animal. There are enough out there. There are enough out there in society. But we can't just leave them there. That is why we reach out to them. We still give them opportunity to be connected to Krishna. We give the Sukriti. Let them get that Agyata Sukriti. Harinam. Distribution of prasadam. We still do it. Because that is the mood of a pure devotee. That is what Prabhupada is teaching us. That's what the Shastra teaches us. Lord Chaitanya says, I'm a gardener. I've got this wonderful treasure. Okay? This chanting of the holy name. I've got this holy name, but how many of these fruits can I distribute with my two hands? Please help me distribute this holy name. So, don't be Narapasus. Hare Krishna. Questions? Comments? Corrections? Everyone's quiet, which means either they got no questions or they're meditating on what has been spoken so far. Okay. Yeah.
You said various categories of people, non-believers. So Prabhupada was very successful in preaching to the non-believers. Every movement was reject the authority, reject the government, reject the parents, reject the religion. But yet he went and was very successful.
Very good comment. I'm not sure if anyone heard, for those who benefit of those listening through internet. Ananda Vallabha Prabhu commented that Prabhupada has been successful in reaching out to all categories of jivas out there. In summary. Yeah. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, jai.